Okay, welcome back. We have got an absolute legend in the studio with us today, as we mentioned at the top of the show. Absolute sporting royalty in the chair opposite me. I can see her cringing now. But let me tell you a little bit about her. She's probably the only person I've ever met to have a Wikipedia page. And she is a... Well, her name's Simone Wern, and she's a baseball player. She's a national team player from 2001 to 2008. She was a captain in 2008. She was the MVP of the Women's World Series in 2002, pitching coach in 2011-12 of the national women's team, head coach of the under-18 national team 2013, head coach of Victoria in 2013. She's the current head coach of the Australian national team, the Emeralds. And to top all that off, if that's not enough, she has been inducted into the Baseball Australia Hall of Fame in 2012. The first woman to be accorded that particular honour and also the youngest person. Absolute sporting royalty. Welcome to the show, Simone Wern.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, so you're just a bit of an underachiever then.
I'm not sure. That Wikipedia page was not my doing. Can I just confirm that first? And everything you've said there is correct, apart from the fact that I am no longer the head coach of the Emeralds. I have been for the last 2 years, but I just resigned from that position. But
okay, well, then there's up-to-date information. That's fantastic. Now, how does it make you feel when you hear someone, not that I've ever had that pleasure, but how does that make you feel when you hear someone reciting back all your accolades and achievements?
Look, it's an honour to have achieved so much in the sport that I love. Been involved in baseball for a very long time, since I was 6 years old and started playing t-ball back at my local club in Springvale. However, it doesn't really sit well with me. Baseball's always been a team sport, and obviously still is a team sport for me, and I've never taken the field for myself. Pretty much all of my great memories involve my team, and everything I've achieved is because of the teams that I've played on. So it is difficult, to be honest, when you hear things or hear people talking about your personal achievements, because it's not, you know, it's not a tennis game where you're playing by yourself. Certainly everything I've achieved is revolved around my teammates and the people I've played the sport with. So,
wow. So I want to take you on a journey just back to your younger days to give our listening audience a little bit of a feel of how you got into the sport. What did get you? When did you start, and what got you into baseball? Because, you know, baseball's not, it wouldn't be on the top of everyone's hit list.
No, it's not. Yeah. And absolutely 100% family. So the club that I've played my whole life with and I'm still involved with is named after my grandfather. So it's KH Wernfield in Springvale. My grandfather, my auntie, my mum, my dad, my uncle are all life members, and they've all had a heavy involvement on and off the field, so on committees, playing, obviously, state representative, stuff like that. So when I was five turning six, I went down to play t-ball. I've got a brother who's 2 years younger, and both start at the same time. So I'm now 34, so about 28 years I've been at the club and still love it like I did when I first started.
Wow. So were there any influential coaches in the early part of your development as a baseball player? Can you remember back anything that happened in your junior days that kind of motivated you to just go that step above it just being fun?
Well, I've been really lucky because women's baseball is, I suppose, in its infancy still. It's been around in Melbourne for 20 years. It's our 20-year anniversary this year, actually. But that didn't exist till I was 14. So I played club baseball all with boys. Pretty much 99.9% of the players are male.
Yep.
It's a little bit of a change, but not really. And so grew up playing with the boys, loved it. But my dad was a huge supporter, obviously, of letting me play the game. He'd played the game all his life. loved it. And he'd represented Victoria once, but other than that, it was all club involvement.
Mm.
And he just loved being part of the club and loved the opportunity to play. So he still plays Masters now, and he's 55. So, but I suppose the for me, having someone like that in my life who wanted me to get the chance, even though it was kind of frowned upon back then for girls to play, or girls for, to go anywhere further than having a hit and a giggle. And for me, it began playing T-ball, loved it, playing under 12, sort of loved it, and then realised I was pretty good at this. And I maybe at the time, maybe I should play softball, or what am I going to do with this because there's nowhere to go. And luckily when I turned 14, there was a women's league that started, and from there a Victorian team, from there an Australian team. And
right, so I was going to ask you about that. What were the development pathways back then? Like, you've mentioned that you had some representative side start up, but was there a coaching development player development pathway, did you just turn up to Victorian training or anything?
Not for girls. So, yeah. As I said, my brother's 2 years younger than me. He played Victorian representative baseball all through his juniors, so under 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s. And for most of that time, I just played club baseball because that's all it was. And you did mention before, was there anything that sort of encouraged you to move forward? It was pretty much people telling me I couldn't do it and that I wasn't allowed to, and there were coaches who didn't want to coach girls because they were girls. And obviously we all know, or anyone who knows of baseball at all who doesn't know local baseball knows baseball in the States, and that's Major League Baseball is just all boys. So there was just no place for girls, and the more people said, I don't want to coach you, I don't want you to do anything, and we're not going to support you, the more I said, well, I want to play. And I was so lucky to have my dad, and so he's probably the most, not probably, he is the most influential person, and I've been really lucky to have him sort of guiding me and giving me a chance.
Wow. So you're playing in that the 14s, and you're representing the state, and then you make the jump to the national team. So how did that come about, and how did you get selected? What was the landscape in those days?
So the first, so 20 years ago women's baseball started, 94, 95 was the first season. There wasn't a Victorian team till 1999, which I was 19 at the time. So I made that team, and from there was sort of just a couple of national championships. 2001, they picked the first Australian team. There was a World Series. Canada was hosting it, was in Toronto, and they were invited to go. Australia was invited. And from our national championships, they selected basically an all-star team of 20 girls, the 20 best players, and we went over to Toronto. So that's sort of how it all began. And there wasn't really trials. It was, you're at a national tournament, you know, Victoria, New South Wales, WA, South Australia, all that. Played, and from there the best players were picked.
What support did you get, Simone? Did you get anything in terms of grants, or was there any kind of elite training program that you guys could participate in?
No. So the first trip was $5,500.
Yep.
To represent Australia, but no one cared at the time because there was no opportunity. So
that's self-funded. Yeah,
self-funded. So yeah. The chance to put on an Australian jersey was just... that was the ultimate. So I was at uni at the time, and I straight away deferred because I needed the money to, obviously I wasn't a kid anymore. Mm. I had to pay my own way, so I went and got a part-time job that turned into a full-time job, data entry, just to pay my way, and never went back to uni.
Never went back to uni.
My mum was really stoked about that.
But you represented your country.
That's right.
That's an amazing, amazing achievement. Now, what we talked about, people who influenced you in your junior days and gave you that spark and that desire to be the best that you can be, apart from your stubborn streak, which is somebody telling you can't do something. When you got to that adult competition, did you have anyone in the coaching ranks or anyone besides your dad there that really put you on a path? Because you've had an awesome career. So were there influences there
stage? I think probably one of the influences and one of the places I really got to learn a lot about representative baseball and how you go about that was from watching my brother. I would always go to the tournaments and I sort of understood what it meant to go to a national championships and the game time to expect and the tactics that were used and all those type of things. So that was really good for me. But our first coach for the Australian team, Grant Weir, was an Australian, ex-Australian player. He'd sort of been working in and around baseball for our state body, Baseball Victoria, at the time. And he took on the job and he was sort of hard-nosed. He'd been to the Olympics, I think. He might have had an experience where he didn't get to play a lot, if at all. And he was, I think he just wanted to teach people baseball, not just the skills involved but the game and knowledge of the game and how to play the game the right way. And so for a lot of girls, even today, they can throw and they can catch and they can hit, but they don't know baseball and they don't know a lot about what the game's all about and how you play it. So he was, for me, he was the first coach, aside from my dad, which was really cool to get away from just having my dad push me for so long to really guide me. And, you know, he was hard. He was hard on us, and that's, I think, what made me better, what made a lot of the girls better.
Right. So you've gone now from your playing experience and now you're dabbling in coaching. What's the biggest difference between playing and obviously there's a new set of responsibilities, but what kind of skills do you need to bring to the table to be a good coach?
Coaching is 1,000 times harder than playing.
Really?
I didn't grow up, I wasn't one of those people who grew up thinking I'm going to be a coach someday. I just played and I love playing, and I never really thought about anything else because I just loved to play and that's all I wanted to do. And a serious injury sort of pushed me in the direction that I probably had to retire. And so there wasn't many females coaching, so I was sort of pushed into it and people said, well, you should coach, or there's no one else and you could do it. And so I ended up doing it and just realised the more I coached, you know, I'd coach club, but I hadn't really coached state and national teams. And it's just hard because you know, when you go out and play, especially me as a pitcher, so I go on the mound, I control every pitch and I make stuff happen. But as a coach, you can prepare whatever you can prepare and you can expect whatever you can expect, but you can't, at the end of the day, you can't control anything. You can't pick up the ball and throw it. You can't go up and have an at bat. And I found that really, really difficult.
Mm. So how do you cope with that at an elite level? So they don't do what you've asked them to do. How do you cope with that?
It's hard. It's very difficult. But I think you've...
Do you blow your top? Do you...
No, and look, I don't coach like that. I never have. And I've had a lot of... I tend to think I've had a lot of coaches in the past who've taught me good things about coaching and bad things.
Yep.
And I think I've taken all of those on board along with my playing experience, and that's made me the type of coach I am. I don't think that you get through to your players the best way by screaming and yelling at them and abusing them. And I know that never really worked with me, and it never really worked with the girls that I played with. You've got to be measured in what you say and how you do it. And you've also got to understand the players on your team, because you can talk to certain players a certain way and certain players another way in order to communicate with them.
Yeah.
But look, you've got to – you prepare your team the best you can, and then if it doesn't go right, you know that you've done everything you can to get the result you wanted. And sometimes, you know, you guys know more than anyone that sport's just sport and stuff happens and you can't do anything about it. So
what's the major difference between, in your opinion, between your club baseballer and your more elite representative type baseballer for all the parents out there that are listening in and thinking about, and kids as well, thinking about trying to get the best out of their game?
It's probably a commitment thing. So I, as I said, been involved in my club program for 20 years. We've got three women's teams at our club, ranging from 14 years old to about 60 years old, and from Australian players who've played on the national team for 15 years to mums who've never picked up a ball and just want a release from the kids to get out of the house. And it's just a commitment thing, I think. So if people are willing to commit themselves and they just love the game so much that they're willing to commit their life to it, because that's what you have to do if you want to play elite baseball, even in women's baseball. So, you know, if you're a club player and you just love the game, there's nothing wrong with that. And I absolutely support baseball at all levels, because often I find that clubs will distinguish different groups, and they acknowledge their elite players more than they acknowledge just the players who play club. But I think it's really important that, you know, everybody makes up a club, and it's really important to encourage and support all your players. And if they're not going to play for Australia, that doesn't make them any less than someone who does. It's great to recognise, obviously, elite players, but there's a fine line between, I think, overdoing that and sending the wrong message.
Baseball is a sport. It does make the papers here in Australia very often. You know, it's not a widely publicised sport. There has been great advances in terms of the Australian Baseball League and competition, and the profile of the sport has certainly lifted with the Aussies going over to the major leagues and becoming stars over there. How do you see the growth of the sport? Are you seeing a lot more participation on the ground? Are you seeing more people interested in it?
Definitely more people interested in it. I think that your last interview sort of discussed that a little bit. The age of social media is taking over a little bit, and I think that'll be really important to, and it already is important to the local ABL club. So Melbourne, my brother actually plays with Melbourne, and my dad's a volunteer down at the Melbourne Aces. So I know they're still, this is their fifth season, I think. So they're kind of still in their infancy, even though it's the second time around for the ABL. But I think it's just a matter of getting it out beyond the baseball community as it is. So I think they're trying to pump the ABL through the baseball community that already exists, and they need to go beyond that and, I suppose, establish new players and new interest. I think that there's a lot of scope for increased participation, but at the moment I'm not seeing a huge amount. And I think that will come, though. I'm really positive that will happen.
In saying that, you're now... And it's a very exciting time for sports community, because you now join the team at sports community. So sport and increasing participation and some of these other objectives that we're talking about is now going to be part of your life's work or your work. And we're super, super, super impressed and excited about having you on board. What types of things you'll be doing for sports community?
I think in the short term, I'll be running some seminars. And so, first of all, thank you very much. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to be a part of sports community. And I am really excited, I suppose, just to meet people initially from Clubland who are looking to do more for their club and you know, provide more opportunity for their members and I suppose create a great culture. And that's what it's all about. And all those things will help them increase their participation. It all goes sort of hand in hand. And that's probably something I didn't mention, is that I'm president at my local club where I've played for 28 years and have been for 8 years. And that's sort of something, on a side note from my playing, that I'm really proud of, that people don't talk about often. They say you're in the Hall of Fame, which is fantastic, don't get me wrong, and you played for Australia, but they don't talk about that you're president of your club and you've put in a lot of time and effort to helping grassroots, and that stuff's really important to me. And so one reason I'm really excited about sports community is that I'll get to talk to people and work with people who want to do that. And as I said before, sport's not all about the elite and not all about people playing at the highest level. It's about getting more people to play and... You know.
Well, you're an absolute breath of fresh air, because you know, you talk to a lot of elite sports people, and it's pretty much the motivation is just this inbred competitive animal that I'm sure you have that, but once they've played their game, that's the satisfaction that they get. But yours is such a more rounded experience, and the fact that you're president of your club just shows that you're prepared to put some effort back into the game that's done so well for you. I want to talk about, because there'd be a lot of baseball grassroots baseball teams out there that could potentially be listening to us, and most clubs have similar objectives. You know, they want to increase participation, they want to get more people come to the games, they want to have more members, they want to get more sponsorship dollars, they want to create a good culture. What are some of the ways that that you can think of for improving culture, for example, at a sports club, so a baseball club that might have some kids that come in that you know, wrong side of the tracks, have made a few mistakes? I mean, how do you set up the right culture at your club?
Well, I suppose it's taken us a few years to sort of be where we want to be as a club, but I think probably the number one reason that we are where we are at the moment, we're in a really good position, is because we've empowered the volunteer. And when I say we've empowered the volunteer, I probably mean our committee is fantastic. We've got a great bunch of people. But aside from the committee, we've got just a whole heap of people within our clubs who are players and supporters who don't actually play. Parents, you know, sisters, cousins, daughters, whoever they are, who just love being around the club. And so they want to be involved. And, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, we were in a difficult position at the club, and we weren't sure where we were going. We didn't have many juniors. We didn't have a lot of people around, and we knew we had to do something about that. And I think we went out and sort of sought a little bit of experience, a little bit of knowledge, and some people who could really offer something. And from doing that, we created this environment where people saw us trying to do something positive and wanted to help. And we encourage and we really support our volunteers. We train them, we look after them, we reward them, we love them. And that's an environment where people want to be and they want to come back. And it's also an environment where people want to play. So people from other clubs who understand that, you know, what we stand for and the culture that we expect from people, and we, you know, that we've, I suppose, not forced, but we've almost demanded of our members. And now it's just there, it just exists. Mm. And it's hard work, but the volunteer side of grassroots is so massive. It's just massive. And I realised that before I was president. I was on the committee, and sort of a couple of people would be on the committee just to say they're on the committee, and they didn't really know what it meant. And now we have people who have a certain knowledge in whatever area it is, and people who didn't think they could offer anything, who do offer great things and offer, you know, a hell of a lot that they didn't think they could. But, you know, you can. I'm coaching our T-ball program at the moment, and I was happy to do it by myself, but I rang a few people and emailed a few people and said, would you like to be involved? And they said, I don't think I'd be very good at that. I said, I think you'd be great. Why don't you give it a go? And they came down, and they are great, and the kids love them and the parents love them, and now there's 5 coaches with only 10 players. So encouragement, support, empowering the people who, you know, are at your club to give their time, it just makes a really nice environment and culture where people want to come back.
So I'm a parent out there. How do you get into the game, and what is suggested, like, routes for getting into the game, and what should they be playing? And T-ball, you mentioned T-ball. Mm-hmm. Should they be playing competition? From a layman's layperson's point of view, how do they get involved in baseball?
Well, there's so many different ways to get involved. I suppose at the moment we've got a fantastic webmaster who updates our website and looks after our social media, so we have everything in that regard up to date, which we didn't have in the past, which makes it easy because members and people throughout the community get everything they need really easily without having to search it. And we find that we do everything, so school clinics to try and get the local kids involved, we put posters up at the milk bar, last season we did a letterbox drop of about 5,000 pamphlets that one of the committee members got donated for free, and probably 30 different people over 6 weeks delivered 5,000 of them, and I think we got 5 new members out of it. And for us, that was like, it's massive. 5 new members is heaps.
Hmm.
So just getting the word out there, and that there's T-ball, there's under 12s, and you can just come to training, and that's one thing we've really pushed with our, especially with our females. You don't have to come and commit 20 hours a week to playing. If you want to get out of the house and get away from your hubby and your kids for a couple of hours, just come to training. You don't even have to play. Or if you want to play but you don't want to train, that's fine, you know, and just come down and enjoy yourself while you're at the club. and then you can go home.
So in terms of like juniors, for example, parents can go and register online at different... How do they find out about clubs? Is there a, like a...
Baseball Victoria has a club finder now on their website, which is great. So they can actually put in their postcode, their suburb, and it'll pump out the closest clubs to you, that kind of thing. And obviously Google search is used all the time. But and they actually ran a TV ad not long ago as well. And they're running stuff through Foxtel when the ABL All-Star Game's on. And so, you know, word's getting out there. But.
Talk us through the equipment that's required. So if for parents that are for looking at potentially putting their kids through a baseball program, what's the base level of equipment that's needed? And then maybe give us an idea of, like, you know, the super duper.
Nothing. So if you wanted to bring one of your kids down to play and they, and this is usually what happens, they're not quite sure if they want to do it or commit, which is absolutely fair enough. We've got gloves at our club, we've got bats, we've got balls,
so
we've got helmets.
So it's all provided.
We provide everything. And pretty much every club will do that in the short term. And then the kids that really get excited about it will go, "Mum, can I get some cleats, or can I get a glove? Can I get my own bat? Or can I get batting gloves?" You know, all that stuff. And all that stuff can be expensive, but it's readily available. There's 3 or 4 baseball stores in Melbourne, and you can get some basic stuff at Rebel. But, you know, if you turn up to a club and you just want to play, most clubs will provide you with the equipment without having to pay anything.
So what about registration fees? Do they what's your average, you know?
They vary club to club, but one of the things that we've established over the years that I've been president is we want people to play for the smallest amount possible. So we base all our budgeting around our canteen and running social events, so we keep our fees cheap. So our fees are the cheapest in the state, probably in the country. I haven't looked at those figures. But to play juniors at our club, so a T-ball program for 7 weeks is $70. So that's pretty much $10 a session.
That's good.
They get really good coaching. They get use of all the equipment. They get a hat. They get a sticker. We do a dinner for them every week. So they get looked after. And so it's reasonably it's probably one of the cheapest sports to play if you want to sign up and become a member.
Okay, so I want to probably finish on a more of a theoretical question. How do we – baseball is a sport that's growing and it's getting a little bit more profile, but how can the sport push itself into more mainstream media, get more coverage, and I'm talking probably specifically not just the men's but the women's as well. How do we help the sport become more top of mind out there in the sports community?
Putting me on the spot a little bit, but I would think something that I've noticed about not just baseball in the States but I suppose AFL here and tennis and netball is there's someone that people know and people recognise, and I don't think we do that. So we've got players in the States. Travis Blackley's just signed a contract with the Giants again, and he's already played for them and a number of other clubs, but pretty much no one over here would know who he is. Grant Balfour playing for the Rays, getting paid millions of dollars to play baseball, and no one really knows. I think we need to get those people out there, and you know, a couple of the women's players, and so there's someone they recognise and they know.
Yes.
Because from there, like, I don't really know much about netball. I don't really follow netball. I've been to one game at the Vixens, but I know who Bianca Chatfield is.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, we've come to that time of the show again, unfortunately, when we have to say goodbye. You've been listening to us, Sports Community Radio, here from the studios of RPPFM 98.7, 98.3 on your dial, the voice of the peninsula. You can follow us from our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can get our latest podcasts if you've missed a few episodes, and a whole lot of other great information, including the latest in grants and resources such as how to develop your sponsorship packages and run your annual general meetings, for example. Okay, so we hope you've enjoyed the show. From myself, Jonah Vella.
And myself, Steve Pallas. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.